Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You do yours and I'll follow yours.
Yeah?
Yes.
Now why don't you do yours?
Okay.
Because I want to see you decipher that awful scribble.
So now we welcome a man who is extraordinary. He has written fantastic books. He is the doyen of interior design in so many worlds, and a man who knows literally everybody who is worth knowing, including us now.
Sumptuous soft furnishings and high-end opulent standard lamps litter his glossy realm. In splendour he dwells. Ruffians have no place in his domain. He is clearly Nicky Haslam.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you here. And we talk vaguely about transport. And of course, you have been going around the world, travelling the world with jet set folk all of your life.
And prop set folk.
What are prop set folk?
Well, propeller planes.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Wilbur Wright. And
exactly.
What was your first journey by air?
Oh, that was when I had polio in 1947. And my parents hired a plane and flew me to London, and it was the most terrifying flight ever. It was so bumpy, and I was roped into this sort of gurney thing, and my parents were bouncing up and down beside me. It was terrifying, so I was really put off by flying for a long time.
I was in a Tiger Moth a couple of weeks ago. It was a gift, you know, one of those ones they take you up, and so I flew around. But I would say, if anyone goes on one of those trips, take a cushion.
Yeah. Wooden seats and everything, or metal.
Yeah, you know, after an hour and a half, your arse gives way.
Because I remember flying to Paris not long later with my mother. That was what must have been an old army plane. It was all metal seats. And
yeah, like a Dakota.
But yeah. In my mind's eye, I always imagined that flying in the sort of past was glamorous, because did you fly at a time when travel was still glamorous?
Yes, I think even going to Paris, it must have been like 1948 or something. People dressed to fly. I mean, they put on gloves and hats, and it was a big number. And you look very, very smart. And certainly when I first went to America from the Heathrow in 53, it was very smart, very elegant.
What a lovely idea. What was Heathrow like in 1953 to go to America? I mean, people also at that time, nobody went to America. I mean, I remember even in the 1970s, a friend of ours went to America, and then we all sat round when he returned and listened, as if a medieval explorer had returned. What was it like in the 50s travelling?
Well, it was a stratocruiser, because you had wonderful beds.
Oh.
Properly made beds, sort of bunk things. My mother and I had one. And we flew from Heathrow, so it was then three huts in a field, because they'd stopped using Northolt as London Airport just at then, I think. And we had to stop in Goose Bay or Gander or something to refuel.
And did you have sort of seats facing one another?
You had a kind of sort of cabin of your own, not a cabin, a sort of niche of your own.
So this would be before.
It was night time, so we did go to bed pretty early.
Did it take a long time?
Yeah, it took 12 hours to get to.
Yeah, because then you got the Comet in the
50s. Yeah, my father went on the Comet.
And that's when it started becoming a lot of people, you know, flying abroad at the same time. So this was just the luxury. Flying to America was purely for the opulent.
It was in those days, I think, yes.
And when you said people dressed up, what would we wear? Because I would be prepared to dress up for a plane nowadays. I think that's a very good idea.
I think ladies wore a sort of smart two-piece suit and a hat and white gloves.
Oh, lovely, yes.
And, you know, the real
Because now it's very casual wear, isn't it? People dress up to go on planes in soft furnishings.
Yes, jockey, jockey bottoms and plimsolls.
Unreal. Then they change to even more joggier bottoms when they get on the plane, those awful pyjamas.
Do you have a pair of tracksuit bottoms?
I don't, you know, but that's right. I've
never had any.
No, I do. I live on them.
Do you?
You're lucky not to get them today. I love gym clothes.
Do you?
What was the purpose of your trip to America? Were you going to a film premiere or were you
visiting? No, that came later. No, my mother had been married to an American before my father, and she had a daughter in America. We were going to see her.
You're wearing some American dog tags, but when you went there into America, did you join the military?
Well, I did it the way. No, my mother was very good about letting me do what I wanted to, and I was walking between Penn Station and Grand Central Station. It had a sort of walkway underneath it. And as I walked around, this very, very good-looking soldier came towards me, full kit, you know, seemed incredibly glamorous. And he looked at me and I looked at him and we stopped and he picked me up. I was 14 at the time, by the way. And he was an actor called, he was called Ray Foster. And he'd been, just got back from Korea for the war. And he had his dog tag on. And we became great friends. We never went farther than that, but he was an extraordinary person, sweetheart. And he took me to stay with Tallulah Bankhead. That's what I found a lot of, because his mother was a friend of Tallulah's. And he had a flat in apartment on the Third Avenue with the Third Avenue L, the elevated railway, which up Third Avenue, still outside it, rumbling past. Oh. I got so involved in it, I thought it was sort of escape from my boring English life, that I ran away from my sister's apartment on 66th Street, left a note saying I've left and I'm going to live with Ray. And I got to the house and he wasn't in it. This woman opened the door and slammed it in my face.
Oh.
And so I had to go back and go up the servants' entrance at 66th Street to take away the note, which actually my sister had seen and was laughing like mad. And anyway, when I got back to school at Eton, I wrote Ray these passionate love letters about how wonderful it was to be free. And he didn't reply. And sometime during that term at Eton, my tutor came in and said, I've got to see you on a very serious matter. Your parents will be there. Come to my study tomorrow at 3. I went, and there were my parents. And the woman who slammed the door was his mother, who opened all my letters and sent them up to my tutor.
Oh, no. Oh. So the letters, he'd never even seen the letters.
Yeah.
They'd been diverted straight back to your school.
And then when I went back to America with David Bailey and Gene Shrimpton in 62 or something, I thought, well, I'll try and get in touch with Ray. And I did, and he was adorable again. Then I lost touch completely. And odd enough, through Edward Montague, who knew him, I found out he was living in Puerto Rico, and I remember, and then he came back to America. And then he came to my book launch. And after he gave me his Korean War dog tag, saying, "You were the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life, and I want you to have this." So I've still got it.
How lovely. What an extraordinary tale about dog tags.
And you still wear it now.
Yeah.
So you still hold a torch for Ray.
Not a torch, no, it's just a memory of him. He was such a nice, sweet man.
And you say, did you hang about with Tallulah Bankhead as well?
Yeah, he took me to stay with her for a weekend. And the other guests were Estelle Winwood, that famous old lesbian actress, and Sally Cooper, Gladys Cooper's daughter. And it was amazing to know all these glamorous people.
And Tallulah Bankhead, she's got stories about
her. When we walked down the lawn, Tallulah, I said, "Hello, Rick, what have you got there?" Looking at me. "Too young even for us," she said.
"Too young even for us."
Well, she used to smoke like 200 fags a day and then be on set and say, "That camera boy there, I want him in my dressing room now." And then in the afternoon, it'd be someone else. No time to act with all the shenanigans and smoking that went on.
And were people more glamorous there?
I saw quite a lot of her, actually, after that. I mean, she became a friend. In fact, she once took me to dinner with Dorothy Parker. And I was longing to meet Dorothy Parker, the famous wit. Tallulah got blotto before we left to go to Dorothy Parker. We arrived at Dorothy Parker, she was blotto. Not one of them made one word of sense. These two great wits. Nothing.
A bit like us.
There's a place down at St Margaret's Bay in Kent also, which Noel Coward used to have a house there. Mm. And who was it? I was thinking it was Dorothy Lamour, but it was someone else. And that people used to flock round, because when she turned up to stay there, she used to go swimming naked in the sea, and all the town folk would all gather round to
quite,
have a look.
Quite attention seeking. Do you ever swim naked in the sea?
I think I have. Have you?
No.
Never.
I always wear trunks.
Always wear trousers.
You should jump off those cliffs. It's quite difficult to swim at the sea in that bit of Kent, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of shingle if you're sort of naked.
I thought it was all those sheer drops.
Right, yeah, there's a cliff right behind it. I can't remember who it was. It was
Ian Fleming lived there as well.
He lived next door. Mm. He used to sit on his roof, drinking and writing James Bond.
And of course, as we all know, as this is a transport podcast, the the bus that went from St Margaret's Bay up through Kent, I think to Canterbury, I think it was where it went, was the 007.
Is it?
There.
And is that where he got the name from?
Yes.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. That's where 007 comes
There's
from.
The bus in Ashford, maybe, is the 666, which is where Aleister Crowley got the idea from.
What led you into the world, the very successful world for you of interior design?
Well, it was really by mistake. It was like when I'm in America, I worked on Vogue, and I was there for a bit. Then I was given a magazine called Show, which was like Vanity Fair, which wasn't published at that time. Hunter and Hart had had it. And I was art director of that, youngest art director in America. Then that folded, and I'd been to Hollywood a lot with a woman called Jean Howard, who was married to Charlie Feldman, the great agent. And every summer I'd go and stay with her. And you just say to Jean, I'd like to meet Marlene Dietrich. She'd ring her up and say, come to lunch, and Marlene would come. It was an extraordinary, easy life of when Hollywood was Hollywood, and the star system was the star system.
But how did that all gateway into a world of you designing all these sort of wonderful
I had the apartment in New York and the ranch in Arizona, and people just liked it. And when I came back in 72 or something, I had no idea as a profession. I'd been a cowboy, and I did a bit of photography for Vogue in Los Angeles, and I worked for Dominic Dunn on a film he was making. And then I came back to England, and I hadn't got any credentials of sort, and people had liked my apartments in New York and it had been in the papers, so I thought I better start decorating. And luckily I got a lot of young Mark Shand and Nicholas Soames. They all wanted it done because they hadn't got girlfriends, and it just went from there.
Was the idea that if you had a nicely decorated flat you'd get a girlfriend? That's sort of a reason of getting
the trouble is that you get a girlfriend who wants to decorate the flat. That's always a bore for me. I hate girlfriends who want to decorate their boys' flats.
Well, just after you sort of made them all nice. Yeah. Yeah.
So this was in the 50s?
No, that was 70s. I started in the 70s.
And what was 72. So what style were you employing in the 70s?
Well, I suppose I had a sort of American look too, which I'd seen so much in Hollywood and New York and upstate New York and all over America. It was post-war that I remember English decor. My parents' house wasn't either, some weren't, but it was very ordinary English decor then. Nancy Lancaster changed it, of course, a bit, but it wasn't. And I had a sort of American look, sleek and lots of bamboo and soft stuff, you know.
And a frigid air.
What are some of the things that you think make a room right and would make a room wrong?
Well, it's very hard to put it into a few words, but I think a room should make you smile as you walk in, not even knowing you are smiling. It may make you feel, this is where I belong. Everything should meld. The lampshade should meld into the pictures. The pictures should meld to the ceiling. It's got to be a blend from the floor up, so your eye doesn't ever stop at anything. That makes a room happy. Mm. Another thing that's ruined decoration is not smoking, because the ceilings never get a nice colour.
That's right. Well, that's what's ruined the colour of a lot of pubs, isn't it? But they used to be a very nice sort of golden sort of fawn.
I paint my
tobacco
ceilings that
colour.
No.
Yeah.
But do you know,
getting dirtier in the corners.
Well, like theatres and pubs were painted in brown, red and cream. Brown for beer, red for wine, and the cream for white wine. And which was probably also to disguise tobacco on
but
the ceiling.
But surely pubs didn't serve wine in those days. Wine was brand new.
Well, that's what I heard. And it was theatres actually heard it as well.
But they didn't have wine.
Well, that's what I heard.
I don't think they had wine. I remember wine being quite rare.
Well, I remember wine being rare. In the 70s,
like port.
You'd have bull's blood
you'd have
Liebfrau milk. Yeah,
blue num.
And that was it.
And Matthias Rose.
Wasn't Matthias Rose made entirely from chemicals?
I think so.
They'd be a good sponsor for us.
I've got a bottle of Matthias Rose.
Did you lay it?
It's a really pretty bottle.
It's a nice bottle. I've got it. It's never been opened.
Yeah. Yes, well, it's good. Lay it down. Good idea.
It's a nice label.
Yeah.
I might open. I didn't know. Is it made entirely from chemicals?
I believe so. It's either that or Blue Nun. One of those two is. I can't remember.
Blue Nun's rather coming back, isn't it? People like German wines, aren't they?
Yeah. Sweet pudding wines.
Oh, lovely, don't.
Do you like them?
Love them. Mm. I don't like wine, but I love sweet ones.
What's your tipple?
Oh, gin and anything with gin, really.
Gin and anything.
Yeah. Gin and Lipton's iced tea, perfect.
Gin and Lipton's iced tea?
Yeah.
Really?
It's delicious, yeah.
Is it?
Well, it's a sort of, it's a Long Island tea, is it, what they call it now?
I might try that.
Do you drink gin?
It's
the best.
Sipsmiths.
Yeah, well, yeah, I just buy co-op and put it in a grand bottle. People don't know the difference.
Really?
I mean, once you put the stuff into it,
yeah,
could be anything.
I like the Sipsmiths lemon drizzle.
I must go for that.
It's nice. Hmm. Might try it with iced tea, though, as well.
I've never tried mixing iced tea with anything, I have to say.
Lemon iced tea, the peach ones, fine.
But you say you had a ranch in America. That must have been quite a commute. I mean...
Well, no. After I worked on those two magazines and did the one issue of Harper's Bazaar with Dick Avedon, I sort of got bored of New York. In a sense, I was... Having been the English boy in New York, I was too sort of... want a bit photographed. I sound sort of stupid, what I'm going to say. But I was, you know, sort of too... I don't mean well known, I mean too obvious a character. And I just wanted to get away. And I bought this ranch in Arizona. So I'd always, well, who hasn't wanted to be a cowboy? Let's face facts.
Did you ride horses?
Yeah, which I was terrified of until I went there. But who hasn't wanted all the cowboy gear and all the. And we had another ranch.
What, did you have all the gear?
God, yes.
Was it like the Gene Autry kind of stuff? Was it like big chaps? And
Chaps.
Chaps.
Not chaps.
Oh.
Yeah. Like High Chaparral.
Yeah.
Were you ever a cowboy? You see, I was always rather wanted. Well, I wanted to be Horatio Nelson for a bit. But you couldn't get the uniform age sort of 6 or 7. But you could get the type of hat by nicking one off a Chelsea pensioner who had a small head. Well, no, buying one from a shop. And so I would wear this hat that my mother got me. And then I think she made me a blue tunic. And then at the time. My father and his friend had a small seafood restaurant called the Sea Net at the bottom of the Admiralty Building in Earl's Court, decorated with sort of sea nets, literally, and bottles of Italian, empty bottles of Italian wine with sort of wicker around them and things like this, red and white checked tablecloth, sort of the Sea Net, a fisherman's retreat,
and a candle in the Matthias Rose bottle,
exactly the sort of thing, and I would be sat on the counter some evenings, dressed in my tricorn hat and Horatio Nelson uniform. This is all aged about sort of 5 or 6. And one evening, I was in there and the chef came running out and screaming, "I'm going to kill you, Bernard," and dragged my father on the floor and had a sort of meat cleaver and was about to kill him. And fortunately, his partner, Colin, said, but that's not Bernard, that's Derek. At which point the chef said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm so, I can't believe it." But felt so bad that he made a fuss in front of me. He gave me great big gifts the next day.
How did he mistake? I should have gone to Specsavers.
I think he was incredibly drunk.
That's that. Yeah. Well, so what was this, a continental fish and chip restaurant?
It didn't do very well, I don't think. But I think in 1963 or 64, that was exactly the sort of restaurant that people went to for a foreign dining experience.
Well, going back to cowboys... I had a horse once, and I wanted an American saddle with the pommel at the front, which you'll know all about. And
that's why I could ride, because I can't ride English.
Anyway, I tried out an American saddle, and they put it on this horse, and it immediately threw me off, and I dropped flat on my back from about 12 feet in the air.
Oh!
And the woman, she said, "I'm so sorry about that." She says, "The horse hasn't been broken in yet." And I thought, well, and why did he put this saddle for me to try on a horse that hasn't been broken in? So that was my experience with American saddles, and that was Where was it?
Yeah.
In Kent. There was nowhere glamorous.
Dressed as a cowboy in Kent. The other thing, of course, Nicky, which we love very much, is your popular tea towels with lists of things that are common.
Yeah.
Because a lot of us, you know, need a bit of guidance with this sort of thing. Yeah. What sort of things? I mean, there was loving your parents. I remember that was quite common. That was a very good one, I thought.
I can't. You know, all things I can't remember. I've got so many.
So common things in what sense?
They're not. Well, people think I mean common in the Nancy Mitford non-new sense. I really mean things that irritate one.
Yeah.
Commonness in that sense. And so, the way people say things, and
yeah,
I put David Bowie pictures of David Bowie on Instagram. That's common.
Yeah. Putting pictures of David Bowie on Instagram is common. Yeah.
So another common thing. What I did was a painting once, which was the most popular paintings that there are. I looked them all up on the internet, and the most popular paintings, and combined them and people, and combined them all in one painting. So the most popular car. So Corvette, you know, the 1957 Corvette,
yes.
Thunderbird.
Yeah. I had that in America.
That, David Bowie, the Starry Starry Night.
Yeah, so huge icons of popular culture, icon, commonality. You know,
and I combined them all in one painting.
And was it a success?
It was a huge success for a moment.
And what was the other, but I thought, is there a common vegetable?
Tomatoes.
Oh.
Yeah.
I would have said potato.
No, they've got mashed potato. You can't that common.
No, they're common at the moment for people to start every sentence with so.
No saying or butting, my pituitary used to say. Never start a sentence with so or but.
Yeah, well, people do now all the time. And I was filming the other day and found myself doing it and really had to think hard to not do it because it's kind of engraved itself into everyone.
It's a habit, isn't it?
Yeah. People like, what's he called, that man who does have Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Yeah, the what first man?
Chris Tarrant.
Chris Tarrant. He says Shear instead of Shire. Lancashire. Oh.
if I put in my satellite navigation in the vehicle, because you have different voices, but I think it's just a standard setting. If it's telling me to go up the Old Kent Road, it pronounces it Old Kent Road. And so I put, even if I'm not going up there, I put that in just because I want
to same thing if you're going to Canterbury as well. I've found really? In my car, I used it once and I've never used it again, but there's a telephone. So if I say I want to speak to, if I said I want to speak to Jules, it would send me to someone who sounds like that.
Yeah.
So it'll be, you know, oh, here's Julia.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I did, and I got in touch with three old friends I hadn't spoken to for 20 years when I first used it.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
What about transport forms? I mean, have you a favourite way of travelling around? I mean, is it car? Is it by boat? Is it by train? Is it, what's your sort of favourite transport?
You'd be lost without a car, wouldn't you? And I've got a car in the country. But I do, I like flying a particular way, as you know, we often do, rather rarefied planes, even if the wheels fall off. And I don't like boats very much. I mean, I love boats, like up we go on. I don't like sailing boats. My mother had a sailing boat, and she would be absolutely terrified.
What car have you got in the country?
Oh, just a Volkswagen.
I don't know, a new one, cheaper.
No, an old one.
And what's the most lavish car you've ever had?
I once bought a most beautiful car I've ever seen. Just before, actually, I left it outside of my house when I went to America and stayed there for a year. It was a 1939, which was the year of my birth, Delage, which Delage was the French version of Rolls Royce.
Yes, so glamorous.
And it was open and it was white and it was just absolutely ravishing.
And where was it? I mean, where did you have that car?
I had it when I had the little house in Lambeth, across the river.
That must have been quite a thing standing out in Lambeth, the 1939 Delage.
It was amazing. We used to, driving around London, there was such fun in it. It was open, well, you could open it. And it had that beautiful Gothic grille.
Yes.
It was the most beautiful car ever designed. Those great sweeping wheels.
Great wings with wheel covered with spats.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. Yeah, not Art Deco spats.
And it was exactly the same car as Carol Lombard gave Clark Gable for his wedding present.
Did the Hollywood stars, when you were there meeting them, did they all have glamorous sort of cars? You imagine, Marlene Dietrich to have a sort of a 1930s Mercedes and Clark Gable to have a sort of an Auburn or something, or a Duesenberg.
Gene Howard had a very small two-door Rolls Royce. That was very chic. And I remember when I first ever went to her to stay with her, and she sent the car to the airport. It was waiting at the steps of the airport. It got in the car and it drove me to have dinner, because she'd gone ahead, at George Axelrod's, the playwright. And there was Mort Zahle, Groucho Marx, all the great comics were there. It was so extraordinary, first night at Hollywood, to be with Groucho Marx.
And did you talk to Groucho?
Yes, I had a friend. He took me to the famous Jewish country club once. He was a sweet man, Groucho.
Yeah, how lovely. That's what I mean, glamorous people. And Cecil Beaton, he was your friend, wasn't he?
Great friend, yeah.
Yeah, and what was he like, Cecil? Was he sort of...
Wonderful. I mean, I met him when I was still at Eton. I used to go to the house in London, and then he became a very... He came to the ranch. He rode very well, Cecil, oddly enough.
Did you learn about photography from him?
No. I suppose I learned a bit working with Penn and Avedon and...
Richard Avedon.
Yeah. I did a whole issue of a magazine with him, him and I.
Mary McCartney told us, because she's a part of the skill of being a good photographer, was being in the right place at the right time. Because you've got to be if you're in the room with somebody who's it's of interest to make a portrait of, then you're in the right place.
Yeah.
But if you're not there, if you're not with the right person, you can't even start. You know, you've even got to photograph a tree or something, haven't you? You know, that was her tip.
Tip of life, at the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
So on this ranch, I'm still trying to picture this. So you dressed up in your Lone Ranger gear.
Well, just Levi's and boots.
Who else was there riding around in the cowboy gang?
Well, we were quite far from anywhere. It was 60 miles from Phoenix in the desert. So it was much more... A lot of English people used to come and stay.
And dress as cowboys?
Well, just Levi's. We didn't overdo it. But, I mean, you sort of do it automatically in that country. So, you know, that cowboy gear is all worked out, white, pointed boots. So you get the foot of the stirrup easily, and the slope of the heel, so you get your foot out easily. It's all, I mean, everything has a reason.
All practical.
All dress has a reason. Why are Russian generals' hats bigger than anybody else's?
Why?
Keep the snow off the shoulders.
There you are.
Is it? There we are. Yeah. I wondered that. That's a...
Everything like that has a reason.
Yeah, and that's a great fact.
When I go to foreign countries, I like to dress, you know, if I were in America, I would try and dress as the cowboy.
Yeah.
If I go to Italy, I'm often mistaken for a local person. If I'm in Flanders, I'm mistaken for, a windmill keeper or whatever.
And in France, it's striped T-shirts and onions around the neck.
That's right.
Clogs.
Exactly, yeah.
Do you wear clogs in Lancashire?
Not now, not these days.
We did.
Not on my current tours. We did years ago.
I remember seeing you long ago. You came back from America with a pair of very exciting-looking cowboy boots on.
Yes, I didn't
really very flamboyant.
But I didn't realise at the time what Nicky's just told me, which is that the reason that the heel was so sort of elegantly sort of shaped was so you could get in the saddle with it.
Get it out of the stirrup.
But you see, it's all based on practicality. Yeah, a lot of these things.
You never try riding a horse wearing flippers.
Well, that would be sort of like
a seahorse, you might.
Yeah, a seahorse. Yeah.
Yeah, amphibious. If you were doing like an amphibious car, you could have an amphibious horse where you go into the water and swim together.
Yeah.
I'm sure people do that for some sort of reason.
Now we're entering the realms of fantasy.
That's one of the things on the new Commandist.
What's that?
Swimming with dolphins.
Yeah.
No, that is common.
I've done it.
Have you really swum with dolphins?
Yeah, I was kind of, because I was being filmed, and they said, I'm sure you want to do this like everyone does. And I found it quite frightening, because it's a massive, great big thing with a lot of muscle.
Nuzzling you.
Yeah. And then I had to smile whilst I was you know, caressing it.
Sounds like a nice experience for you anyway.
I've been nuzzled by a pig and a cow before. That's more enticing than a dolphin.
Well, I suppose you're not surrounded by water then, are
you? I've ridden pigs.
Have you?
Yeah.
Where? Yeah. In Borneo?
No, in Yorkshire. Oh. But I was working on a farm, and to catch them, we slow them down. You had to jump on them, so we ended up riding them.
Well, we've learned more on this podcast, I think, about the purpose of Russian generals' hats, cowboy boots, and we've learned a little bit about keeping pigs from you, which has been very useful.
And about travelling. And Vic travels on pigs.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's a form of transport we haven't even talked about.
Pig transport.
Yeah. I once went to see the Palio race in Siena. And the different groups in Siena, what are they called, the ones that have the different leagues or whatever they're called, they have like a cart that looks like a medieval cart, and I think it's towed by oxen.
Yeah.
And they stand on the cart, dressed in sort of 17th century clothes with pikes and breeches and things, and then the oxen takes them around the town square of Siena as a little warm-up for the race.
What are they, pull it a car?
No, a cart.
A cart.
A cart.
An ox
cart. Yeah.
I'd like to be pulled in by oxen, a Model T Ford, being pulled by oxen, giving away gingerbread men to children.
On that note, I think we've got
there's a piece in Sir Severus Sitwell's book on Romania when he goes in the 30s, and it's winter, and he goes to watch the opening of the parliament, and all the voivodes, all the lords of Romania coming to the parliament, arrive on sleds with reindeers with gilded horns.
Oh, nice.
Yes, nice.
Is that chic?
Yeah, that is nice. Mm. I'd like to go to something like that. Why didn't you ever take me to things like that?
Oh, why don't I? Anyway, Nicky, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was wonderful fun.
Thank you for being our guest this evening, Nicky Haslam.
Well, there goes Nicky, returning back to Hollywood and is on a horse, perhaps.
Perhaps on a horse, or perhaps being pulled by those magical reindeer with the gilded horns.
I wish. This podcast was produced and edited by Molly Stewart.
Sound engineers were James Stewart and George Latham.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.